You're listening to the Fiasco Brothers Radio Network. Welcome to Black Op Radio, the voice of political conspiracy research. To call in, we have a secure line ready. Area code 604-525-4167. Again, just call area code 604-525-4167. You're listening to Black Op Radio, the show NSA doesn't want you to hear. And now your hosts, Anita Langley and Leno Sanek.
Little bugs on the beginning of the show. Good evening, everyone. I'm Leno Sanek, and I have my co-host,
Anita Langley.
And we have a great show. Tonight we're going to be speaking to Michael Rupert. He runs the for the Wilderness webpage, and he has done a lot of investigation on the CIA and covert operations with their drug smuggling operations with Ed Wilson, Turple, and a host of others. I think we can probably just get him on the line. Are you there, Mike?
I am here.
Great to have you on the show.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
Been reading your newsletter here. This is a pretty impressive piece of work you've been putting together. How long have you had this going?
Thank you. We just entered our third year of publication. We started in March of 1998 with about 60-plus subscribers. And we're now just topping 700, including 10 members of Congress, the intelligence committees of both houses. We have professors at 9 universities in the U.S. and Canada, and 9 or 10 published authors. So we have quite a readership across the board. Also, a lot of network-level news people, because we're telling them stuff that they can't get in their own house.
Well, maybe some things will start to change now if people can get access to the information.
Well, we hope. That's the purpose of the newsletter from the Wilderness and the website. Website now at copvcia.com has now had more than 75,000 visitors from 90 countries in just a little over 2 years, and that numbers those numbers are going up. So we're having good success with both.
That's great. What caused you to actually get into this sort of thing? You were a Los Angeles police detective, weren't you?
Well, yeah, but it was more a misfortune of my birth than anything else. My mother had been a cryptographer for the Army Security Agency back in World War II. She was involved with Cordell Hull's mission to Moscow in 1943. She worked for the NSA up through about 49, 50, before I was born in 51. My father was an Air Force officer who had gone to work for Martin Marietta on projects for the agency, and relatives of my dad were OSS and career CIA. So everybody in my family was connected to the intelligence community. I was born in Washington, D.C. And when I was in college, UCLA, for 69 through 73, I was interning, and I was chosen to intern for the chief of police, Ed Davis. And my closest friend, Craig Fuller, was chosen to intern for Governor Ronald Reagan. And we were both groomed. I had a Q clearance when I was like 17 years old, didn't know it. It was just because I lived in the same house with my father. And it was very much like Fletcher Prouty's book, The Secret Team. I mean, the team identified and groomed me. And even before I had become a policeman, I was exposed to CIA connections inside LAPD. Ultimately, I discovered that the agency was dealing drugs in this country. The agency first tried to recruit me officially in 73 before I graduated. I was flown back to Washington. They asked me to become a case officer and then put me back through the police academy. And I said, I just never got back to them on that. I didn't want to do that. That was illegal. But I joined LAPD and met and fell in love with a beautiful CIA agent. She was an American lady, and that was a different kind of recruitment pitch. But over time, I began to see that the agency was moving guns out of the country and large quantities of drugs in. This was the mid-70s, and I refused to get involved in anything that overlooked drugs, and that eventually was the end of my career. I was forced out of LAPD in November of 78. I had tape-recorded death threats, and I had asked for help from the chief, and the message I got back was, the chief is busy. If you want to wait for a week, 10 days, and if you're still alive, maybe he'll give you 5 minutes, and that's when I resigned from LAPD.
Oh, it's great to know you have that kind of support behind you.
Yeah. Wasn't much support at all, but then, as I have documented in From the Wilderness and in a lot of research work over the years, and it's some of that's on my website, Daryl Gates has been affiliated with the CIA for his whole life. As a matter of fact, in 1992, he made a statement during the presidential campaign that the only position he would accept in a second Bush administration would be director of Central Intelligence. And, of course, you have to ask the question, what are his qualifications for that?
Yeah, actually, that is a good question. What are his qualifications?
CIA. I mean, the agency routinely, and not only did, has Fletcher Prouty documented this, but so has Philip Agee in his great book, CIA Diary, that the agency routinely places officers, those are deep cover officers, or hires agents inside local police departments around the country because the agency is prohibited from operating domestically. So when the agency has a deep cover officer working as a cop, he can do whatever he wants to using the cover of the of being a policeman. But not only that, the agency can protect their drug operations also that way. And they can also influence local policy to suit agency interests. And we've documented CIA infiltration not only of Los Angeles, but we also have strong documentation at NYPD, New Orleans PD, Chicago. It happens all over the country.
So how big is this drug trafficking ring then? Would you say that these guys are the world's biggest drug traffickers?
Well, the agency... The way I look at the agency is, first of all, I like to take the last word, agency. And if you look up the definition of that, it's a group or organization that works for or on behalf of someone else, serving their interests. And if you go back into the history of the agency, the National Security Act of 47 created CIA. It was written by a guy named Clark Clifford. Clark Clifford was a lawyer and a banker. He's the guy that brought us BCCI. Clark Clifford was given the design for the agency, how it was to operate and how its directorates were to be laid out by Alan Dulles and his brother John Foster Dulles. They were both partners in the Wall Street law firm of Sullivan and Cromwell from Wall Street. Bill Casey, Ronald Reagan's legendary CIA director, during the Nixon years had been chairman of the Securities and Exchange Commission. The CIA is and always has been an agency that works for and on behalf of Wall Street, big business, and the big banks. And the drug trade is responsible for about $250 billion, that's with a B, dollars, worth of currency being laundered through the American economy every year. And much of that goes into the stock market. As a matter of fact, banks are required to report cash transactions of $10,000 or more. There are certain exceptions like restaurants and major corporations. But there is not a single requirement anywhere for a stock brokerage house or a securities dealer to report cash transactions. So, and the securities industry moves three times as much money as the banking industry does. So the drug profits are, by design, laundered back into Wall Street. As a matter of fact, in July of last year, you had Richard Grasso, the president of the New York Stock Exchange, hop on an airplane in New York, fly to Bogota, Colombia, hop in an armored limo, and drive up to the foothills where he met with the FARC guerrillas in Colombia. And what he did was he asked them to invest their cocaine profits in Wall Street. And both AP and Reuters covered it. So the drug trade, much as it did in the 1860s when we had opium wars in China, or in the late 1600s when the British used it to colonize China, is a means of securing low-cost capital to finance business ventures, and it's been nothing more than that.
So would you say that the war on drugs itself is really just a way to, well, we all know prohibition failed. Is that really what this war is all about then?
Well, the war is about keeping the profits in the drug trade. The only reason those kinds of profits are there is because the substances are illegal.
Right.
In 1972, Richard Nixon started the war on drugs. The federal budget allocation in 1972, according to the Hoover Institute, was $101 million. As we entered fiscal year 2000, the federal budget allocation for the war on drugs is $17 billion. And yet there are more drugs in this country today, and they are cheaper than they were in 1972. So that tells you right there that something is not kosher.
That does tell you something. It also says that we'd have some serious financial problems if something was to actually stop this cash flow. I mean, stock markets would crash. I guess we'd really have to overhaul things slowly if this did really become public knowledge and an effort was made to stop it.
Well, I think the stock market's going to crash anyway. This has become something like a snake eating its own tail. And I even think if you read back into some of Fletcher's works, like The Secret Team, you kind of get the picture that this kind of behavior on the part of covert agencies operating behind the scenes is ultimately self-destructive. When you have that kind of money moving through the stock market, yes, it's true, but then you also create a situation where you have to put increasing numbers of people in jail, and we just became a society that has more than 2 million people in prison, and there were only 1 million in prison a decade ago. And 60 to 70% of the new people in prison are nonviolent drug offenders that are only there because they are keeping the prison industrial complex going. There are companies now that trade their stock on Wall Street, like Wackenhut, a CIA affiliate, proprietary, if you want to call it that, and Corrections Corporation of America. They run prisons for the federal government, and yet they trade their stock on Wall Street based upon how many people are in prison under their care. That's not nutritious. I mean, that's like a snake eating its own tail. That's not a healthy economy. And there are a great many signs, and I wrote a large story on this last, I think it was September or October, on Russian money laundering through the Bank of New York, and as much as $12 billion in organized crime money was laundered through the Bank of New York, which kept their stock up just fine. But these are the profits of crime. And that kind of a system is not sustainable anyway. So there are some people who say, oh, my goodness, we can't dismantle the war on drugs because the economy will fail. And my position is it's going to fail sooner or later anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, I have a question for you regarding what you were talking about with Fletcher Prouty's quote of a secret team. Do you think that the CIA is broken in half where there's one half of a house working on, quote, legitimate organization and the other half is dedicated to this illegal activity? Because Fletcher called them a secret team, and he kind of thought they were like an octopus with people posted in the NSA, in FBI, all over State Department. And when they made a call, this team worked in and out of around government, and that's how they got this illegal activities to flourish, blossom. And, you know, a lot of people have spoken about just closing down the CIA. We don't need them anymore. I was wondering if you had an opinion that it was splintered into a legitimate activity and an organized illegitimate.
Well, you know, I would go back to what Fletcher wrote in The Secret Team about the biggest myth in the world being that the CIA was about collecting intelligence. You know, the CIA is about covert operations, period. And I think the issue is getting the CIA completely out of the covert operations business, getting it out of that fifth clause of the National Security Act, such other duties as may from time to time, or however it's worded, which is the nonsense that has, which Alan Dulles used to get the CIA into everything under the sun, from domestic police operations to the economies of the world to owning newspapers and influencing major media. The agency there, it serves no purpose whatsoever except for criminal, illegal, unethical, immoral, un-American activity.
Right, but such as you quoted the last letter being agency working for someone, the NSC, National Security Council, is supposed to be the watchdog on this, and they have been totally circumvented, I think, since Kennedy's assassination.
Yes.
John Foster Dulles and Alan Dulles were, before that, the two voting members of four. And now they were supposed to be requested to do, from time to time, we all use them for covert operations. Now they're just reporting in, well, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. It's kind of makes for a good argument, should you just close down the whole CIA and start with something else? And then the second part of the question would be, well, is there maybe a legitimate side to it that is just doing information gathering and coordination, and is there a completely covert side of the house that really nobody knows what's going on, even the director? Because, you know, there's a lot of people that are just, I call, keeping the seat warm. They're the new deputy director, the new director, and they don't really have a good idea of what's going on behind there. How could they? Oliver North's case, you know, he knew what was going on daily, by the minute, with all their covert clandestine networks, and other people were, you know, basically out of the loop.
Well, what one of the things you've seen is, and I tend to agree here with Peter Dale Scott, is that there isn't one monolithic ruling class, and it's a mistake to look at the agency as one particular entity. There are factions within the agency. It's kind of like a floating crap game, so to speak. Sometimes the players change or different players become dominant, but those in the game always have one objective, and that's to gain money or power. Right now, the agency, I have sources telling me there are more covert operations inside the agency than there are outside the agency.
Yeah, that's what I was getting at.
Basically between the Bush and the Clinton factions. So getting rid of the agency is like, well, sure, let's get rid of the agency, or how do you make a CIA that does what we think the CIA was supposed to do to begin with, which is not what the CIA is at all now.
Yeah, and once the genie's out of the bottle,
right,
we're not going to get it back in there. But it was just a, see, some people have been writing into the website, and I should just clarify that, I'm sure you knew this, but I run the website for Colonel Prouty.
Yes.
And I produced a CD-ROM, so I'm very knowledgeable on everything he has written and all of his essays and things that he never did publish. I've collected all that. But he has spoken so often of the, you know, a secret team and even a gold key club that really worked on their own agenda, like you say. The retired members could be on the Bank of Boston, the board of directors of this company and that company, and they have their own network, which, you know, could circumvent CIA, NSA, FBI, any agency.
Right. And that's the essence of what the secret team is that it can move fluidly between even CIA, FBI, Treasury, Justice Department, the military, however it wants to move. That's the essence of what a secret team is. But we're seeing a kind of a fragmentation. I think it's a mistake to believe that there is one secret team with one agenda. If you had that, America would be behaving like Russia behaved in 1968 in Czechoslovakia. There was no need to have any kind of consensus or covert operations or playing political games behind the scenes. You just do what you want to do. But so that there are factions competing, and there are corporations competing within the agency. You know, it's like you see John Deutsch, the Clinton former CIA director, who sits on the board of Citibank and Raytheon and a number of major corporations. Whereas Robert Gates sits on other corporations that may go up head-to-head for different defense contracts. Those represent, in essence, factions pulling their own strings within the agency. And out of that, they try to form some kind of coherent policy or some way to sell all of this to the American people. I'm really convinced that we're on a very slippery road right now, leading to a ground war in Colombia, which is very much following the model that was followed in Vietnam in the very early 1960s.
Yeah, actually, I've heard some things that do sound like there is some preparation in that direction. Could you elaborate on that a little bit?
Well, I have been covering this for a while. The backstory to this is that Colombia is now the single largest narcotics-producing nation in the world, and over the last 4 or 5 years, I have sensitive confidential DEA reports that I obtained legally indicating that Colombian heroin, that 60% of the heroin seizures in the U.S. in 1997 had Colombian signatures on it. It's very unusual. Most people don't think of Colombia growing the opium poppy. But what that means is an enormous amount of financial power in Colombia. In a world drug trade, which is $500 billion a year, cash sales retail, any one country in the Western Hemisphere supplying up to a third of the cocaine, more than that, probably 50 to 60% of the cocaine in this country and 30 to 40% of the heroin, it has enormous financial power. That's what the real war in Colombia is about. We're structuring an aid package of $1.7 billion. Barry McCaffrey is all for it, and Barry McCaffrey, it should be remembered, was one of Reagan's cold warriors in the Contra War, but he also fought in Southeast Asia with the likes of Ted Shackley and all the guys that were running the covert operations in Laos, Vietnam, and Cambodia. So he's a drug war economic player. And we see in this aid package that's getting ready to go for Colombia here included 65 helicopters. And it was very well pointed out in The Secret Team and also the JFK book by Fletcher Prouty that when you see the helicopters go in with American ground troops, that's the first sign, ground support personnel, of a growing American involvement for a longer ground war. And the model in Colombia, unfortunately, is looking to me more and more every minute like the model in Vietnam.
You're listening to Black Op Radio.